1926, our company moved to that location up there, the 23rd and Josephine. And late 1933 or early 1934, when I came to work for the company, that's where they were. They were in the fabricating business. They were out of the country. And then in 1936, they moved to this location at 20th and Morton Street.
You had said Uncle Abe started here.
Uncle Abe's.
Earlier, but was your father always the head of it?
Yeah. Well, what happened in the company is after the brothers were all in it. See, the first one in it was Uncle Abe, and he really worked in the junkyard. Grandfather. Then when my grandfather died, my father came in. And then later Uncle Jack and Uncle Money came in. Uncle Jaime didn't come in until way later because he was a dentist. Sometime prior to the company actually started to phase out of the scrap business, and they started to get into secondhand beams and steel. And in the process of being in the secondhand business, they would occasionally get involved with the demolition of buildings and get the old steel beams out of it. And I remember one time. One of their first jobs that had to do with demolition was was an old Mellon Bank building on the north side. I even talked to some of the present officials. I don't remember it, but there had to be an old Mellon Bank building on the north side. And my father and his brothers had the contract for demolishing that building. And I remember that my father put an ad in the paper. He was so proud of the fact that they had this contract for Mellon Bank. And the ad said, Levinson wrecking the Mellon Bank. So somebody from the Mellon Bank called up my father and asked if he'd mind changing the wording a little bit. So, but they got into secondhand steel. And then they began gradually, even before they moved here, to do some fabricating right in the scrapyard. They didn't know much about it. They were, when they first got a job for fabricating some steel, they wanted to make sure that it went together like an erector set. They'd actually put a part of the building right in the scrapyard, and then they'd take it, bolt it up, and then they'd take it down again to make sure it fit. Later on, they did, you know, they began to do engineering, but that was the way they started. I don't know where, I don't know what question I was answering. Oh, yes. When the four brothers were in, they kind of divided up the job. And although the company started, we officially say 1902. I think it started before that because I have some documents somewhere, probably should show something from the Levinson Company back in the year 1900. But we say 1902 is our official date. But in 1926 it was incorporated. Before that it was an individual proprietorship or a partnership. But when the four brothers came in, my father was the head of the company. He was the president when it was incorporated. And he was the out front man, he was the salesman, and he handled the finance. And Uncle Jack, he did the buying, he bought the steel, he had the mill contact, he was the merchandise man. Uncle Abe was in charge of the shop, and Uncle Money was in charge of the office, and that's the way they divided up the job. And then when I came in 1933 or 34, probably it was about 1938 when I became the salesman. So that's the area that I took over.
When were you married?
38.
And what was Sonia's maiden name?
Zaludkowski. Zaludkowski.
And where was she from?
Well, she was born in Warsaw and raised part of her life in Rostov, R-O-S-T-O-V, on the Don in Russia. And then her family actually got out of Russia illegally because it was pretty rough for Jewish people in Russia, I think.
When did she immigrate, do you know?
I don't know exactly.
But they were fleeing the communists rather than the Nazis,
yeah,
at that point.
She was just a little girl, and then they went to England for a year and lived in Liverpool, where she still has an uncle. And we visited him there. And her father was a cantor, so her father went got a post in Liverpool for the cantor. Incidentally, the next generation has a cantor in Liverpool right now. That's her uncle's, her first cousin. Then they moved to Detroit, where she finished high school and went to Wayne University for 1 year. And then they moved to New York, and each time they moved, it was because her father got another appointment with another senator. And Sonia graduated from Hunter College in New York. Shortly after that, she came to Pittsburgh and married an older fellow in there.
So you hadn't known each other that long?
I didn't have gray hair then.
No, I know you didn't.
I had all my teeth.
But had she been in Pittsburgh long before you met her?
Well, I tell you, so that's an interesting story. You want to hear how we met?
Of course.
Well, when one of my closest friends during my years at Auburn was Elkin Avner, and it so happens that one weekend back in 1938, in February of 38, my mother was alone because I had a girlfriend in Youngstown. My sister was going away to college, I think. And my father was in Florida. My mother was alone with my baby sister. I guess she was born then, I don't remember.
Yeah, she was.
But anyway, my mother was lonely this Saturday night, so she called Elkin and she said, "Why don't you come on over and I'll have a little party for the kids and I'll have a little feed and bring some of your friends." So he called up a few of his friends and he called up the girl who moved into next door, just came from New York. And that was Sonia, who was the cantor's daughter. So my mother met Sonia before I did. So I came back from the weekend on Sunday. And my mother told me about the party and said, "There's a really beautiful girl that came, the cantor's daughter from New York." And even though I had been visiting this girl in Youngstown, I said, "Well, I've got to meet her." So I called her up. I think I called her the next day, Monday. It turned out to be the 22nd of February, 1938. It was, if I remember correctly, it was Lincoln's birthday. I think it was either Washington.
I think that's Washington.
Washington's birthday. And well, I called her. She didn't want me to come over because her sister had just come that day from Palestine. But I talked myself into coming over. I met her that day, and I remember that I asked her for two dates. The very first time I saw her for Wednesday night and Saturday night. And Saturday night, I asked her to marry me. And on May the 3rd, which was her birthday, just 3 months later, I gave her away an engagement ring. And August 28th, just 6 months and 6 days after the date I met her.
That's our anniversary, too.
We were married.
You know how that writes out, 8/28/38.
Right.
Where did you live when you were first married?
Oh, we lived at 2135 Whitman Street in a building in which my father and his brothers had a partial interest with Mr. Sachs and maybe some other people. Anyway, we rented a house there. I could be wrong, but it's in my head that we paid $62 a month. But I could be wrong. It's in my head that we paid $62 a month rent.
How long? Do you remember how long you lived there?
No, exactly. Not very long. A year or two.
And when were the children born?
We had one child that died at birth, who was born sometime around November of 39, and then Jim was born in, I think, June 2nd, 1942. He's now 35, would that be right?
Mm-hmm.
And Eleanor was born 5 years later, so she was born 1947 on August 12th.
Where did you move to after Whitman Street?
To Tilbury Street. We lived in not far from Alderson. We lived in a duplex on Tilbury Street. You know, again, I'm not sure.
When did you move to Shaw?
Well, that was our next move.
I know.
And I'm not sure exactly. You know, my wife would know all these dates, but
I
don't know.
I think we moved in 43 from there.
Did you?
And I don't remember. No, it would have been 44. But I don't remember whether you lived there yet or not. I can't
remember dates. The thing I know is that about 1956 or 57, we moved to our present home.
Yeah.
But I don't remember dates. Sonia can tell you exactly when we moved at each place. She has things that she remembers them by. I wouldn't be surprised if when Jimmy was born, he lived on Tilbury Street, I think. So, she ties it into this.
Yeah. Women do that.
Yeah.
You've been with the company ever since 1934.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about the different things you've done in it.
Well, actually, you know, I started in the shop office. I actually started before that because I started working summertime when I was in high school. And I used to be a rivet heater. Take them home. I really was. My Uncle Abe gave me a rough time in this. He really made me work.
I think he did with all his nephews, yeah, didn't he?
He sure did. But then I came back working the shop office. That was my first job. And then when I came over to the main office on Pride Street, I was a traffic manager for a while. And then something like 36 or 37, I became sales manager. In 38, we started our, what we called the warehousing business. And I started it. My father had the idea that we should be in the warehousing business. I really started it. I started calling customers. I started to do the buying for it. And they don't call it the warehousing business anymore, and they now call it the steel service center industry. But that was back in 1938, and I was the manager of it. And I kind of remained the manager of it until, maybe about 1947 or 48. I'm not sure if I had the title, but I was going to be executive vice president, because I was doing a lot of the things that my dad had done prior to that. And in 1950, at the age of 35, the board of directors had a meeting, and I wasn't on the board, but they elected me president of the company, the board of directors, and it was my dad and his brother. And they elected me president of the company, and here I was, 35. And I had these uncles that were, 10, 12 years older. As old as 50. And they were working for me. It was a strange set of circumstances.
Your father then became chairman.
My dad became chairman of the board. And I've made a lot of notes over the years. I've often thought of writing a book about the family business, because it was really challenging, especially in those days. And I knew that running a family business was different, had many things about it that were different than running another kind of business. But I knew very well that if I wanted to have peace in the family, that I had to treat. And I wanted to treat my older uncles with reverence. And even though officially I was president, I never threw my weight around with those guys. I don't remember ever picking up a phone and asking anybody, any of them ever come to my office, say, Uncle Jack, Uncle Money, and Uncle Abe. Oh, if I wanted to talk with them, I'd go to their office. And I don't remember ever telling them to do anything. I would always ask their advice about things. Say, how do you think we ought to handle this? And then the most I'd say, maybe it'd be a good idea if you do this, but I never ordered them around. And I think that in a family company, human relations is even more important than a non-family company. So I remember those things.
You can't go home and complain about the boss in a family company.
You're right. You can. But it doesn't do much good.
What was it like here during the war? You weren't in the service.
No. Interestingly enough, a lot of my friends wanted to have jobs that tied to the war effort. And our company we were considered tied to the war effort because, we did a lot of work that was involved with defense plants, and we had a big contract to build parts for the Maritime Commission, and so as a result, I had some of my friends who wanted to have a job tied to the defense efforts, and they came to see me and came to work here. Guys like Howard Smith and Johnny Ferber and Irv Levitt, they all came to work here during those years, and worked here during all the war years. And we did a great deal of expanding during those war years. And I remember there were great shortages of steel. One of the things that I could be thankful to my dad for was he taught me the importance of building a good reputation in a business, and the importance of building a reputation for integrity. And I remember there developed great shortages of steel, and between my dad and Uncle Jack, they did a fantastic job of having steel when no one else did. They had so much steel during shortages that we didn't even have enough room for it here in our plant. We used to have to rent yards. We rented yards up where the railroad was to lay down steel. And other times we rented space in other places to lay down steel. We had steel when no one else did. And while we could, you know, there were no price controls at the very beginning. And while we could have charged anything, and some companies were charging, were doubling their price overnight. We never did. We charged what we always thought was a fair margin for our product. And that helped us to develop a good reputation. There was what they call a black market for steel was sold above what we were allowed to sell for, and then gray market for selling steel above what you should have sold for before the price controls. So we were never in the gray market, we were never in the black market.
I remember when I worked here in the summer during Korea,
yeah,
when there was so much of the gray market,
yeah,
sending regrets to certain companies, but automatically were not,
yeah, right,
dealt with at that time.
Yeah, see, you remember. One of my favorite people back in those days is a little girl called Nunny. I just loved her. I do now too, but I used to go to babysit for her.
Did you really babysit?
I think so. Pretty sure.
I remember lots of visits, but I don't remember the babysitting.
I'm not sure. How could I know for sure?
Yeah. What? I'm sure you've had an extremely active social life. What were some of the things that you've most enjoyed?
My social life? Well, the thing that I enjoyed most was a wedding I went to in 1938. My own. That was a great social event. It took place at the Bechelm, and then there was if I remember correctly, there was a reception afterward at the Cheney Hotel, but I could be wrong about where. It may have been some other place. How could I not remember where? But I really don't. I think it was Cheney Hotel. But you're talking about since my marriage or before any time?
Well, what what hobbies and things that...
Oh, you mean...
That aren't necessarily connected with
things
work.
Things unrelated to the business. Well, as you know, one of the things I've always been interested in since I've been working, I've been in the community, and I could talk about that later, but I've had other interests. Especially since my grandchildren started to come, I've been interested in photography, but not to take pictures like my cousin Joel does, not to be a great photographer, but just to have pictures that I can remember things by. And if you look at my desk right now, you see what I mean since my grandchildren came. Because almost every one of the pictures you see, if I'm not in it, I took it. But I have pictures, strangely, back a couple of generations in my home, and my wife and I made a project to, we made a dozen panels with about 100 pictures in each one, like montages. And we have one room that we just covered with these panels of pictures from all the generations, my family, my wife's family, over the years. I want you to come and just take
a
look at it.
That sounds
great. You may want to take a picture of it for your book. But it's really interesting the way we did that. So taking pictures has always been part of my thing. And I've always, I think one of the things my parents taught me was the true meaning of friendship. So, you know, friends have always been very important to me. Girlfriends as well as
boyfriends. Before we go on, I know you've been very active in the Young Presidents organization. Can you tell us a little about that and how it felt at 35?
Yeah. 1950, a guy by the name of Ray Hickok started the Young Presidents organization. Ray Hickok was the president then of the Hickok Belt Company, and he was in his early 30s. And he found that being in the early 30s and being president of a company which had any kind of size, it was a difficult, challenging thing. So there were a few others that he met with from time to time, wanted to talk things over with, and he found there were others around the country that were very young and who were presidents of companies. So he started the Young Presidents organization. Now, I was in it almost in the very beginning, nationally. The very first convention of the Young Presidents was held in Virginia Beach. I wasn't in it then. But the very first meeting in Pittsburgh was, the Pittsburgh chapter was organized by Al Rockwell, who is now chairman of the board of Rockwell International. And he started it in Pittsburgh. And I was a charter member in Pittsburgh. And I went to the second national convention in Boca Raton. And we had conventions in Boca Raton and then in the Arizona Biltmore in Phoenix and then in different places around the country. Later on, they began, as the organization grew, they began to call it the School for Presidents. But the very first convention I went to in Boca Raton, at that time there couldn't have been more than 100 members or so. There might have been 75, I just don't remember, not more than 75 couples attended that first convention, that second convention in Boca Raton. And there were some pretty important people over the years who had belonged to it. The organization has since grown. Your cousin Jim belongs to it, and it has something like, you know, I don't know how many members, somewhere like 3,000 members. Because what happens, excuse me, I just have to be just a little bit. What happens is, it happens nowadays is that a lot of fathers want their sons to be in the Young President, so they elect them president for that reason, and so the thing began to grow very fast for that reason. But there are a lot of fathers and sons. For example, Joe Katz was a member when I was, and his son's a member now. But over the years, we've had, you know, a lot of prominent people who have been in it, people like people who were mayors of cities, a guy named Ivan Allen, who was the mayor of Atlanta, a guy named Cervantes, who was the mayor of St. Louis, a guy named Milton Schaff, who was the governor of Pennsylvania, was a member of the Young President, a guy named Willard or something, Blunt, who was a postmaster general, was a member of the YPO. We had quite a few prominent people in public life. And then many large corporations were represented. The Bata Shoe Company that has shoe plants all over the world. With Tom Bata still, well, we all of us at the age of 49 automatically got out of the Young Presidents, but then some of us became chief executive, which I'm in now. But there's a number of graduate organizations. There's an organization called the World Business Council, organization called the the 49ers. And in Pittsburgh, we have the Pittsburgh 49ers, just Pittsburghers who once belonged to UIPO. I found it a great experience, not because of, only because I made great friends. One of my closest friends, who was in YPO with me and now in CEF with me, is Don Peters, president, now chairman of the board of Mellon Stewart. But not only because I made friends, but because I learned a lot. We compared notes. We had seminars. I went to seminars at the Harvard Business School conducted for YPO.